show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you give me! Give my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good morning. Have a good day.
Hey, what's your number again, please?
8695.
She has the World Trade Center.
Someone having difficulty breathing on the 83rd floor.
Hey, ma'am, how you doing?
Is it, are they
going
to be able to get somebody up here?
Well, of course, ma'am. We're coming up to you.
Well, there's no one here yet, and the floor is completely engulfed. We're on the floor, and we can't breathe.
Okay.
And it's very, very, very hot.
Are the lights still on?
The lights are on, but it's very hot.
Ma'am, take
very off. Hot. We're all the way on the other side of Liberty, and it's very, very hot.
Any lights? You can turn the lights off?
No, the lights are off.
Okay, good. Now, everybody stay calm. You're doing a good job.
Please.
Ma'am, listen. Ma'am, if everybody's coming, everybody knows. Everybody knows what happened, okay?
Yeah.
But don't know, they have to take time to come up here. You know that. Got to be very careful.
It's very hot.
I understand. Got to be very, very careful how they approach you, okay? All right? So when they come upstairs, it won't be worse than it is. Now, you stay calm. And so how many people where you're at right now?
There's like 5 people here with me.
All up on the 83rd floor?
83rd floor.
With 5 people. 5 patients. Everybody's having trouble breathing?
Everybody's having trouble breathing. Some people are worse.
And some people
are
unconscious. Everybody's awake?
So far, yes, but it's...
Listen, everybody's awake?
Yes, so far.
Conscious. And it's very hot there, but no fire, right?
I can't see.
No,
too high.
Very hot. No fire for now, and no smoke, right? No smoke, right?
Of course there's smoke!
Ma'am, you have to stay calm.
There is smoke! I can't breathe!
Okay, you stay calm with me, okay? I understand.
I think there is fire because it's very hot.
Okay.
It's very hot everywhere on the floor.
Okay. I know you don't see it, and I know, but I'm going to document. I'm documenting what you say, okay? And it's very hot. We see no fire, but you see smoke, right?
It's very hot. I don't see any air anymore.
Okay.
All I see is smoke.
Okay, dear. I'm so sorry. Hold on one. Stay calm with me. Stay calm.
Please. Listen.
The call is in. I'm documenting. I'm going to let them... Hold on 1 second, please.
I'm going to die, aren't I?
No.
I'm going to die.
Say your prayers. And we're not
going to die.
We're going to think positive because you got to help each other get off the floor.
Stay calm.
You're doing a good job, ma'am. You're doing a good job.
It's so hot. I'm burning up.
If you don't, the floor is hot and everything is hot. They're all their desks. When you go up high, you get too close away from the smoke. Okay. I know you know. Hold on a second. 83rd floor, 3 people trapped. Very hot on the 83rd floor. 3 people trapped. Having trouble breathing. It's very hot.
Wait, we have voices. Help! Help!
And that's what I'm doing. I'm just letting you know. Okay. Hello, ma'am?
Help!
Can you stay calm? Ma'am?
Help!
Stay calm. Stay calm. Just don't move.
Oh, my God.
They coming through with you now?
Find out if there's anybody here on the 83rd floor.
Ma'am, don't worry. You stay on the phone with me, and we'll already
know. Can you find out if there's anyone on the 83rd floor? Because...
Ma'am, I already... I already notified this lieutenant, okay? Ado, I notified Anthony.
Ado?
Yes, Lieutenant Ado. I already notified the lieutenant that there's five people on the fourth floor, right? Very hot and smoky. So they will overlook you, okay, dear?
Can you?
I already did that.
Can I go on with you, please?
Yes, ma'am. I am going to stay with
you. I'm dying.
Listen, missus, take
They're here?
Are they inside with you yet, dear?
No.
Okay, stay calm till they get inside.
Find out where they are.
Ma'am, stay calm until they get inside.
Karen.
Ma'am, what's the job number you have? I have 727. 727? Yes. Hey.
Taken from a little bit after 9 o'clock in the morning, September 11th, 2001. One of the darkest moments in American history, and I wanted to take a few moments to commemorate that today. Many, many people lost their lives, and many people have lost their lives because of it since. 8:46 a.m. on September the 11th, 7 years ago today. An American Airlines Flight 11 out of Boston was hijacked and crashed into the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City. And 17 minutes later, United Airlines flight from Boston crashed into the South Tower of the World Trade Center. And the horrors that happened after that, around 10 o'clock, I think it was 10:05, the South Tower of the World Trade Center collapsed. And the North Tower collapsed 23 minutes later. Unimaginable terror and horror that took place in New York City that day, that took place in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, southeast of Pittsburgh, on United Airlines Flight 93, and also American Airlines Flight 77 crashing into the Pentagon at 9:43 a.m. So in the space of 2 hours, less than 2 hours, and an hour and 17 minutes, four terrible crashes, many lives lost, and something America will never forget, should never forget, that set off a couple of wars that we're still involved in. Some of the numbers with 9/11, 2,600 dead at the World Trade Center. Many bodies never recovered, bits and pieces for many families. There were 125 killed at the Pentagon. There were 256 passengers aboard the four planes, 19 hijackers. We'll never know the exact number at the World Trade Center. That's an approximate number, according to the 9/11 Commission report. There were 18 survivors found in the rubble by September the 12th. 17 babies born to 9/11 widows. There were 3,051 children who lost at least one parent. 1,609 people who lost a spouse or partner. Cost $600 million to clean up the World Trade Center site. There were 1,506,000 tons of debris cleared from the World Trade Center site. Thankfully, there were $500 million estimated charity money collected for the NYPD and Fire Department of New York families. There was $2 billion in charity money collected for all the 9/11 victims. 422,000 New Yorkers suffered from post-traumatic stress from the 9/11 attacks. But Americans came to the rescue as much as possible. 36,000 pints of blood were donated to the New York Blood Center. They only needed to use 258 because of so few survivors. There were 116,000 American flags sold by Walmart on 9/11, and church attendance went up by 20% the following Sunday. So it was an awful time for America. It was a horrible, horrible event in our history, one of the worst, if not the worst. one must remember Pearl Harbor, certainly, and all the soldiers we lost in terrible battles in the Second World War and First World War, but this was something up close and personal for most people. They could see it. I know I was at the office when the first plane crashed into the tower. I got into my car and drove home as quickly as I could, just in time to see the second one crash. And it was a sense of, that many of you had a sense of disbelief. I think with the first one, many folks felt the same way I did. What a horrible accident. By the second crash, it was no longer an accident. The other two crashes, horrible things took place all within just a couple of hours' time, and America was put on watch that we were under attack. I'm not proud of how we responded to it. Many people remain not very proud of how we responded to it. Many people called for blood immediately, didn't matter whose blood it was, I'm afraid. And there have been many innocent people suffer in these 7 years since that time. It's one of the things that this election is about. How to get ourselves uninvolved from the war in Iraq. We've done nothing, virtually nothing, to capture Osama bin Laden, and now the administration is pretty much sloughing that off, saying, well, he wasn't the mastermind behind it anyway. And the media just wants to make sure that you don't forget 9/11. They also want you to remember to tune in to each one of their tributes today so that they can remind you that we were attacked by terrorists, and they're going to remind you that 9/11 is the reason that we're in Iraq, even though not a single terrorist on 9/11 was from Iraq. What they won't remind you of is the 4,000-plus Americans who've died for these acts committed on 9/11. And the mastermind behind these attacks has not been caught. But don't worry, John McCain will pick up where George Bush has failed. And let me quote John McCain on this. I'm not going to telegraph a lot of things that I'm going to do, because it might compromise our ability to do so. But look, I know the area. I've been there. I know wars. I know how to win wars. I know how to improve our capabilities so that we will capture Osama bin Laden, or put it this way, bring him to justice. We will do it. I know how to do it. Those are the words of John McCain. You know that area, John. Have you been on some clandestine CIA mission into the hills of Pakistan that you can't tell everybody about? You know wars, John? Which wars are these? Vietnam? We lost that one, John. Iraq? We're certainly not winning that one. Afghanistan? Just yesterday, the Joint Chiefs of Staff seemed to think we're losing it. And you know how to improve our capabilities to capture bin Laden? I would have Mr. McCain remember that he voted to send our boys into harm's way without the equipment they needed to fight the war that he voted for. I don't want to overly politicize 9/11, but it's shameful that McCain is politicizing it, and he has the gall to tell us, well, I know how to get bin Laden, and I'll do it, and I know how to win. Well, if he does know how, why aren't we doing it? He takes almost complete credit for any success we've had with this surge, which is temporary because of the extra troops. So if he has that much influence with the White House, why does he hold out if he's got this idea on how to capture bin Laden? If he knows how to do it, then do it. But the fact is, he's lying about that. He doesn't know any more how to capture Osama bin Laden than you do, or I do, or anybody else does, or they would have done it by now. Actually, I have to tell you, I really thought I was going to hear that in the last couple of days when we've been talking about the excursions of American military into Pakistan. It seemed to me that we were maybe finally on a serious hunt for Osama bin Laden, and he would be presented to us any day now to be brought before the court, to be brought to justice. But I was wrong, and I don't know if that was a serious attempt. I really don't know. But what's there to say at this point? Even after the past 8 years, the continued freedom of bin Laden and al-Zawahiri, it's an outrage that stands alone. You know, if you remember, for a while, Bush even told us, I don't know where bin Laden is and I don't care. You remember that? But they told us years ago how serious they were about the hunt, didn't they? One more empty promise, one more lie. And so it is, we commemorate a 7th anniversary of the horrors of 9/11. If you have a remembrance of that day you'd like to share with us here, or our audience, you can call us at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I'd love to hear from you today. We're not going to talk about 9/11 all day today. We're in a political season, and we will continue to talk about that. Lord knows you've probably seen many tributes and all that that took place today. We saw Mr. Bush do that today. We saw Mr. McCain and Barack Obama all paying their respects today. The Congress of the United States adjourned for a while and paid their respects. I think it's shameful that the people that go to 9/11 and 9/11 Ground Zero, actually is what I mean. I've been to Ground Zero. And it's sobering to see it. And here we are 7 years later, and it's still nothing more than a hole in the ground. There's been little or no progress on building anything. When you go there, all you see is a big green fence around it. You have to go into an adjacent building up higher to be able to look down into the hole. But it is shameful that 7 years have gone by and nothing's been done. There have been squabbling and discussions and all this and that. You're telling me we couldn't get this done in America? In the United States of America, we couldn't get this new building and this memorial and all built in 7 years? I understand that the Empire State Building was built a long, long time ago, and I understand it's a whole lot smaller building than the new one that's being proposed, a whole lot smaller than the trade towers were, but I also understand that I believe it was built, if my memory serves me correct, in somewhat less than 2 years, or right around 2 years, and yet here we are with nothing protruding up out of the hole from Ground Zero. So, I think it's time for the American public to demand that this memorial and these new buildings get built. Every day that it sits there an empty hole like it is now, it's another day of victory for the terrorist. Think of all the ways the terrorists have crippled America. They've infused themselves into our political process. The Republicans have used fear and terror ever since to win elections. Be afraid. Be very afraid. We're protecting you. It's the only thing that George Bush can claim that's positive of his legacy, that there have been no more attacks. Big deal. How many had there been before that? Big deal. He was warned about that one in August of 2001. A very, very credible intelligence report was given to him in August in 2001, but he didn't want to hear it. He didn't want to waste the time hearing about it. What was it he told the person that brought it to him? Okay, take it away. I've seen, you've told me about it. You've done your duty. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said. We're not any safer now than we were then. Let's face it, if the terrorists want to attack us again, they will. Only 1% of the freight coming into this country gets examined. There's still many lax things that take place at airports. One time after another, we've found that people have tested out the security system and found that they could smuggle things through. They could smuggle guns and weapons through. We've saw that here locally. Not that long ago, maybe 6 months ago, someone got a gun through security here. We've seen many cases of that. So we're a long way from being safe. We've inflamed the entire Middle East with some of the tactics that we've taken in the war there, killing many, many innocent folks, devastating their economy, devastating the infrastructure of their land and not getting it rebuilt. The anti-Muslim movement that has taken place in this country, the hatred toward anybody Muslim. We're going to pay for this for a long time. We'll be under attack from terrorists for a long time, if not always. There has always been and there will always be threats of terror in this world. And we as a nation should not be paralyzed because of it. And I am sometimes ashamed of the way Americans act, like they live in fear. You do not live in fear under the American flag. If you're a patriot, like so many people claim to be, you do not live in fear. We take what comes and we do the best we can with it. And if we can prevent terror, great. We'll never prevent it all. But let's stop using it as a means to get a political office, to scare people, to people that don't understand completely. But I talked to somebody last week. Just last week, I had an interesting conversation with somebody. I didn't know their politics. I thought I did. But I said something to them about it, and the lady, very, very nice lady, said, you know, I am from Colombia. I lived in terror in Colombia. And I moved to the United States 8 years ago. And George Bush has protected me ever since. Now, there's a lady that, lovely lady, just doesn't understand. She thinks she owes her safety to George Bush. Well, she's got a lot to learn. But there's a case right there that propaganda from the Republican Party worked, and it worked very nicely. She believes, and many people believe, that George Bush has been their Lord and Savior, and has taken care of them and protected them from all evil. And it's just not the way it is. Just not the way it is. 866-546-5254. Quote of the day. You can always count on Rick Santorum that if Rick, former senator of Pennsylvania, got voted out, Mr. Casey took his place. You can always count on a real hoot, a good old-fashioned belly laugh, if Rick Santorum, you know, the man-on-dog guy, if he opens his mouth, he's going to give you a quote of the day. Now, here's another one of these people, Republican politico, lied through his teeth about where he actually lived and how his kids went to school and he got vouchers and all this and, lied and took the state of Pennsylvania and the feds' money over all this and all. He's just a fat-ass liar, that's all. That's all you could say for Rick Santorum. And he gets voted out of office. And where's he at today? Well, you guessed it. He's in Washington, D.C., working for the Republican think tanks. Isn't that how it goes? You don't go back to your home district and live happily ever after and get a job. You go to work for one of the think tanks, or you go out and become a lobbyist, a corporate lobbyist, one of the two. So once you've attained that office, and I'm talking about both sides here, once you've attained that office, by and large, you're set. You're set for the rest of your life. And Rick Santorum is no exception, and now I've gotten sidetracked to what I wanted to say about him. I wanted to say Rick Santorum is responsible for the quote of the day yesterday. And his quote was this, Sarah Palin is the Clarence Thomas for feminists, end quote. Sarah Palin, this is from Rick Santorum, Sarah Palin is the Clarence Thomas for feminists. Ricky. I think I need to tell you. I really can't add anything to that quote. It's a quintessential Rick Santorum, except that Ricky might want to consider that Thurgood Marshall was the first black Supreme Court justice some years ago. Ricky was thinking that Clarence Thomas was, you see. But it was Thurgood Marshall many years before Clarence Thomas. So Ricky, well, this is Rick Santorum we're talking about here, okay? I don't know where to take this today. We got so many things that we could talk about. I did want to start out today talking about John McCain's ethics. Like many people, there was a time years ago that I had great respect for John McCain. Just like everybody else, I think that a man who has suffered for his country and all that deserves respect and worn the uniform. I've lost every smidgen of respect I ever had for John McCain. I have no respect left for John McCain, and I want to tell you why. My respect for him started to wane during the Keating 5 incident. And I have to blame the press for not bringing that up near enough and not examining it near enough. During this election season, John McCain was as guilty as could be in getting involved in taking political bribes for favors, for quid pro quos, and he knows it. In his heart, he knows it. He's denied it, and he was he got off the hook. But he was part of the Keating Five. And I lost a lot of respect for him at that time. And back during the 2000 election, when George Bush pulled all the dirty politics against him in South Carolina, I felt sorry for him. I felt sorry for him that he was under this withering attack, false, dirty lies, filthy politics by Junior Bush against him and Karl Rove. I actually felt sorry for him that he could he'd have to undergo such a terrible attack by people in his own party. It wasn't a fair attack. It was malicious. It was awful. It was gutter politics. And he was defeated. But then along comes Junior Bush, and in the next year or two, John McCain wanting to make sure that he stays in with the right people. We've all seen that picture of him hugging Junior Bush. We started to see him kiss and make up, and how anybody could kiss and make up after what George Bush did to him in the South Carolina primary of 2000 is absolutely beyond me. If I'm a politician and I'm running for the presidency and I'm in South Carolina and you level the charges against me in the manner in which George Bush's campaign did in 2000, I'm not gonna kiss and make up no matter what for any reason on this earth. I would not accept your apology. I would never, ever shake your hand again. I would never, ever support you again. That would be it. Because you would have shown me just what kind of a person you are. And believe me, Karl Rove and Junior Bush during the 2000 election in South Carolina, right then and there, showed not only John McCain, but showed the entire world just what kind of low-life slime balls they really are. And what did John McCain do? Kissed and made up with George Bush. That showed me that he was willing to sell his soul to still remain in the run for the presidency next time around. And that's where it got him. That's exactly where it got him. And now we're seeing the true John McCain slither out from underneath the rocks, him and his vice presidential candidate, neither of which have any ethics whatsoever. And I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I believe in the past few days, these people have shown the morals and ethics of a snake. There is nothing they won't do to try and gain the office of presidency of the United States. There is no lie too big for them to tell. There is no kind of gutter politics they won't engage in. You know, Obama isn't running on a romantic biography of some kind. He's running on the proposition that he is smarter than the man who think we should have invaded not just Iraq, but Syria and Iran and for the Afghani-Saudi attacks of 9/11, who at this late date still doesn't understand the difference between Sunni and Shia and how it relates to our national security, who wants to pick a fight with Russia over South Ossetia and picked a running mate who thinks Adam and Eve spoke English while they were riding their dinosaur to church on Christmas morning in 6758 BC. That's what kind of people we have here. And I know it's politically incorrect to say so, but all McCain's sacrifices, all of his sacrifices, and I will say it, were accidental. With the exception of the time he sacrificed his first marriage so he could run off with the hot beer heiress with the politically connected daddy. And I'm going to speak a lot about John McCain's ethics today. And you know what set me off, what lit the fuse on this, was the ads that have come out in the last couple of days. That lipstick one was so far below the belt. I told somebody today, and I swear to you this is the truth, I swear to you by all that's holy, that if Barack Obama had run an ad like this, I would not have anything to do with Barack Obama or any Democratic candidate who would run an ad like that lipstick ad or the sex education ad. I'm John McCain, and I approve these ads. Those two ads, if you knew nothing else about John McCain and Sarah Palin, if you knew not another thing about their lives or their backgrounds, those two items right there are enough to disqualify them from consideration for the presidency of the United States by every single man and woman in the United States of voting age. That's all you would have to know. Those two ads are so far beneath contempt so as to make both of these people utter slime balls, in my opinion. You just don't go over the line that far. Lots of people have gone right up to the line, using innuendo and all that, but any reasonable person knows that Barack Obama was not talking about Sarah Palin as a pig. That was not in any way what he was discussing there, what he was suggesting. No reasonable person could come to that conclusion. Nobody. Only people that are absolutely politically blinded, or people who are blatantly stupid. I'm sorry. But you would have to be dumber than the proverbial hoe handle to have thought that he was alluding to Sarah Palin as a pig. Barack Obama is a learned man. Barack Obama is an educated man. Do you think that he would have been stupid enough to stand up on a stage and make an innuendo that the vice presidential candidate from the Republican Party, a woman whom he now knows he's got to dance around, you can't even mention lipstick, do you think he'd been stupid enough to stand there and make a comparison between her and a pig? If so, if that is what you think, what kind of a moron are you? I have to admit, I've never been more frustrated over politics than I am right now. It would be easy just to throw in the towel right now over this whole business. I am so sick of it. And what makes me sick of it? These things like we've seen the last few days coming from the McCain campaign. Now, McCain knows that isn't true. Palin knows that isn't true. They've run that ad to say Barack Obama wants to give sex education to kindergartens, and they know damn well that isn't true. That wasn't even his initiative, and that's not what the whole thing was about anyway. It was about teaching little kids, not about sex education. It was about teaching them to know who should be touching them and who shouldn't. Who do they trust and who they shouldn't trust? That's what it was about. It was not teaching them the mechanics of sex ed. We all know that. And yet, they make these vile ads aimed at morons, because that's exactly where they're aiming them. They know their constituency. They know who they're going for. They know that they can say these things in front of most of their constituency, and they'll go, yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, that Obama, he's a Muslim, first of all, and secondly, he's trying to teach them kindergartners to have sex. And he called Sarah Palin a pig. That's what you're dealing with. That's exactly what you're dealing with. And I hate it that I feel that way about the American public these days, a good share of them. A real good share of them. Now, some of them aren't that stupid that still support McCain. Some of them are just plain damn stubborn. Some of them just like to be contrary. Some of them just like to make liberals mad. I know Republicans tell me things that they like to see my reaction to it. If they're wanting to get their dime's worth out of it, they usually do if they say something stupid to me. There's a whole lot of folks who voted for George Bush that would never consider how horribly wrong they were to do so. Millions of people. And they've skated away from it. So, well, you know, I know he wasn't a great president, and I, you know, he did a lot of things maybe I didn't like, and he might not be as conservative, but, you know, I. No, John McCain was once an honorable man, but his absolutely blind ambition to be president and his willingness to use repeatedly exposed lies, over and over again exposed, it just shows he no longer retains any of that honor that he used to have. And let me say it clearly so that he can hear it. John McCain, you are a lying weasel, and you do not deserve a single vote. I remember not so long ago seeing Jay Carney talking about McCain in an interview. He said he thought McCain had been body snatched. Yes, he has been. And if he can be manipulated this thoroughly, for those of you that want to say, and I've heard him defended in this way, well, John doesn't, you know, he doesn't make those ads, and he's not running the campaign, and his advisors tell him what to say and all that. Let me tell you something. His name is on those ads, and he says, I'm John McCain, and I approve these ads. But if he's not running this, and if these are not his ideas, and if he can be manipulated this thoroughly in the running of his campaign, what confidence should the American people have that he'll actually be in charge of the government if he were president? Kind of like the situation we have right now with Dick Cheney running the government and Junior Bush sitting in the office going, I don't know. It reminds me of the situation, the way McCain gets away with things with the media and the press. McCain treats the press like an abuser treats his wife. They apologize after hitting you and make excuses, but they keep up with the same behavior, and at some point people have to say enough. Maybe today the press is starting to say enough. I seem to sense they're a bit angry about some of this stuff, that they're catching on. That maybe John McCain isn't a good pal of the media that they thought he was after the Republicans reviled the media. Not that I stand up for him very much either, but at the Republican convention they made an issue of it. And I had somebody send me an email today that said, the worst Republican president is better than any Democratic president. Now, doesn't that show you some of the intellect I've been talking about? So Junior Bush is better than FDR? And, you know, you get another email that says, well, Obama's got that black guy walk. Do I care how the president walks? Do I really care? Is that all you got? You don't like the way he walks? I know what a lot of you don't like. A lot of you don't like the fact that his skin is darker than yours. And I would respect you a whole lot more if you just came out and said so, instead of hiding it. Well, no, I'm not really, against a black guy getting, you don't know how many people I've heard say that I know are racist. But I do wonder when the media is going to learn that this election is becoming a test, not merely for the campaign, but for the press as well. McCain has decided, and Palin as well, they've concluded that he can run the most disreputable, dishonorable campaign imaginable, because he's also concluded that the press will let him get away with it. And so far they have. It isn't enough for you and others in the media to note his lying and his mudslinging. The press has also got to report how his entire campaign has descended into the gutter, and it's beyond redemption at this point. This is really a time in America where the press could stand up and shine and do their duty and show us some truth. He knows how to apologize. He's done a lot of that. He apologized for the Confederate flag comments back then, way back when. He apologized for the filthy Chelsea Clinton joke. He apologized for the Keating Five. He apologized for leaving his first wife. And I'm sure if there was any political upside for him, he probably apologized for endorsing torture and gutting habeas corpus and domestic spying and flip-flopping on his own immigration bill, by the way, and in his own words, doing everything he could to get George Bush elected twice. He probably, if it was politically expedient, apologized for all that as well. And I just wonder, did it ever occur to folks and to the boys inside the Beltway establishment that the apologizer isn't John McCain's real identity? The guy who does the things he apologizes for is? You know, I can't wait till the likes of David Brooks and David Broder and Chris Matthews and Tom Brokaw, who else? Andrea Mitchell, Cokie Roberts, Wolf Blitzer, Bob Schieffer, Jeff Grieve, all of them. I can't wait till they get together and decide Democrats are to blame for poor, dear, noble, heroic John McCain having been led astray from the course of his innate purity and his high-mindedness just because of a political campaign. And they will. They will get to that. Believe me, they will get to that. Someone, maybe a curious reporter, should do a story that examines the question, was McCain ever actually honorable, or was this whole notion something cooked up by McCain and Salter in order to sell McCain to the press? Because other than the press simply asserting that he was, and most would say that he still is, an honorable man, I see no evidence of it at all. I see a pandering, calculating liar. Is exactly what I see. I invite you to argue with that. I wish you would. Call me at 866-546-5254, and we'll discuss it. I'd love to discuss it with you. Really, I would. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
They call themselves Mavericks. Whoa. Truth is, you're anything but. John McCain is hardly a maverick when seven of his top campaign advisors are Washington lobbyists. He's no maverick when he votes with Bush 90% of the time. And Sarah Palin's no maverick either. She was for the bridge to nowhere before she was against it. Politicians lying about their records? You don't call that maverick. You call it more of the same.
Thank you. lately, thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one. And I believe it could be someday it's going to come. And out on the edge of dawn, there I will be pain. Oh, peace, pain, take this country. Come take me home again. About the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. For peace trains sounding louder.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Guy James Show here in the Hit On Radio Network, and I'm in a mood today, and have been for a while now. Do any of you feel the way I do? That I'm just absolutely livid over this McCain-Palin campaign and the lies and distortions that they're putting out. This highly unethical campaign, and please. Please don't anyone insult me by saying, oh, they all do it. No, they don't. Not like this. Not like this. I told you all not long ago that you would see the dirtiest campaign in political history, and they're proving me right. I want Obama's campaign to fight back, but let me stress, let me emphasize that I do in no way want Obama's campaign to fight back with the kind of gutter, filth, and garbage that the McCain-Palin campaign has put out so far. The duplicity, I am just almost speechless over the whole thing. I really am. The more I watch, the more I hear about it, I just am spitting nails over the whole thing. And I heard once again today that speech, that Palin speech, and the Democrats say that they will fight for you. Well, right here stands the only man who's ever really fought for you. Let me state this clearly as I possibly can. Being a POW in the military does not give you the insight into being a president of the United States. It does not exempt you from questions on your integrity. It does not guarantee you respect when you blatantly lie and disrespect others and the American public with these terrible lies that you're backing right now. The flag is not a shield to wrap yourself up in. It's not there to protect you from justified criticism. Thomas Jefferson said, all tyranny needs to gain a foothold is for people of good conscience to remain silent. And by God, I will not remain silent about this gutter political campaign being run by the Republicans right now. How could you consider going into the voting booth and voting for a man willing to get down into the slime and filth like these people are right now? How could you do that? How could you do that? I don't know how you could do it. This is it's like the Republicans are running a, I don't know, I saw that old rerun of a Seinfeld show recently where they had a parallel reality going on in the show, and it was a funny show. But it's like the Bush people are trying to do that themselves, and the McCain, McBush, and the Palin, and Cheney, and all of them. It's like the GOP and their candidates have unleashed some sort of an alternate reality, and that they all want the Americans to believe, and a lot of Americans are believing it, and here you have Junior Bush, who spent the last 8 years not even listening to reality. According to Bush, the economy's fine. Iraq was the best place to target terrorism. Nepotism makes for the best government. Drilling for offshore oil will bring gas prices down right away, if not sooner. And massive debt is what future generations of Americans really want and need. Dick Cheney said deficits don't matter. Right? You remember that? They're living a different reality altogether. And so the GOP heir apparent, John McCain, has so much trouble with the truth that he hasn't spoken realistically for months. McCain is a middle class. He talks about the middle class. He said it consists of people who make about $250,000 a year. Not in my reality. And being a maverick, wouldn't being a maverick mean bucking the party line as much as 10% of the time? Maverick John McCain? That's a lie. He thinks that POW and President of the United States are somehow interchangeable. And he really believes that his vice presidential choice is someone who hates earmarks as much as he claims to. And we got a lot we could say about earmarks with Sarah Palin. And so they got a new member of this alternate reality gang, this Sarah Palin, who wouldn't know reality if it bit her in the ass. You know, if you ask Sarah Palin, abstinence education really works. And it's the only method worth teaching, according to her. And to hear her, God rejoices over pipelines that the Alaskan public is paying for. And that shooting animals from an airplane is the only sporting way to hunt for your trophies. Sooner or later, wouldn't you have to realize that you're just not living in any kind of reality? And better yet, if you're a Republican, just make up your own reality and just repeat it over and over and over again. You want reality? Here's the reality of the 21st century that the Republicans have brought to America so far. They've got the Iraq War, gross mismanagement of governmental funds, they've got torture, they've got record deficits, they've got corporate malfeasance, they've got Katrina, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, a complete economic meltdown, they're against science, they've politicized the governmental agency, the Terry Schiavo mess, Alberto Gonzalez. How far do I have to go on? High unemployment? Outsourcing our military to mercenaries like Blackwater, to the swift boating of politics, tension with Russia, the disaster at Walter Reed Medical Center, we've got domestic spying now, we've got massive future deaths, Condi Rice, Sam Alito, How many billions of dollars sent to Pakistan and not a damn thing to show for it? We got bin Laden still running around willy-nilly. Skyrocketing energy costs. We've got all this. We've... Karl Rove. Tax cuts to the wealthiest Americans. Lobbyists have an inordinate power and influence in Washington, D.C. And that's just the easy things that we could list. A lot of people say, well, reality is what you make it. This is the reality that the GOP has made in America. Is this the reality you want for another 4 years or more? Is it? Could this nation take another 4 years of this? That's a serious question. And so now McCain and Palin are promising change. They lie. The only change they seek is more regressive social and economic policies for America. The only change that they really desire is more debt and more war and religiously based laws. That's the only change that you can really count on from these people. Even more governmental bullying and lies. That's what you can expect from the grand old perverted party. Man, if reality is really and truly what we make it, it's time for a new reality. I am frustrated. I'm sure you can hear frustration in my voice, and I hear it in yours. Looked at the polls the past couple of days and see what's happening in the polls and see that McCain in many cases actually has an edge, has a lead. It's hard for my brain to process that. No matter how much of a pessimistic view that I have of the voting public, it is still hard for me to process the fact that John McCain is ahead in many polls. It really is. Like many of you, if that man should gain the presidency of the United States, I will be just dumbfounded. I would be so disappointed in my fellow Americans. And it doesn't have to do with partisanship. It doesn't. Just take a look at all the facts. Listen to all the facts. Dig deep and find out all about all of these people, all four of them involved in this. Find out the truth about all of them. And if you do your job as an American, and you go vote, when you're well informed, and you think you know, and you've done everything you can to find the truth, not from me, from everybody, just go out and dig and find out. You can find out a lot. If you go through all that and you still think that John McCain is the guy for president, then pull the lever for him. But I guarantee you, if you go into it with an open mind, and you look at his past, you look at Obama's past, Sarah Palin's past, and Joe Biden's past, and you figure out their experience and their judgment that all of them have used, you would find that you just could not possibly vote for John McCain. You couldn't. That's what I think. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. I hope you'll stick with us. We'll be back with another hour of programming. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director, and we'll be back in just a short time.
Listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers can notch another win for workers on their tomato buckets. On Tuesday, the coalition announced Whole Foods Market had signed onto the coalition's penny per pound program, where major food purchasers would pay an extra penny for Florida-grown tomatoes. The idea is that those extra pennies would be passed on to the tomato pickers. In a joint statement with the coalition, Whole Foods Global Produce Coordinator Karen Christensen said the company made the decision after evaluating the situation in Florida. The plan fits with the company's core values. The coalition has had multiple successes in applying pressure on tomato purchasers. Both Taco Bell and McDonald's have signed agreements similar to the one forged with Whole Foods. Iowa's agriprocessors has been slammed with 9,311 charges of labor law violations. Iowa's Attorney General Tom Miller filed the criminal charges against the company's owner and four managers. According to the affidavit filed in court on Tuesday, all of the named individual defendants possess shared knowledge that agriprocessors employed undocumented aliens. It was likewise shared knowledge among the defendants that many of those workers were minors. 32 workers were under the age of 18, and 7 were under the age of 16. The document also alleges that the defendants encouraged workers to file false identification. Each violation carries a punishment of up to 30 days in jail and fines ranging from $65 to $625. The Pottsville, Iowa plant is the leading kosher meat packing plant in the country and was raided on May 12th. The plant managers are scheduled to appear in court today. More layoffs for Ford and GM, but this time the job cuts are coming from across the pond. Overall, 1,900 workers are likely to be let go by the two companies' plants in Spain. Ford says it plans to temporarily lay off between 1,000 and 1,200 workers due to anemic demand. GM plans to slash 600 jobs. Spain has seen a drop in new car registrations of 21% over the first 8 months of 2008. Here is today's economic report. The workplace environment is improving for gay workers, but there is still a great deal of work to be done. A new report from the Human Rights Campaign Foundation found that out of 583 businesses rated, 259 received a perfect score for the treatment of lesbian, gay, or bisexual employees or consumers. Those companies have implemented policies that are diverse and inclusive and also provide domestic partner benefits. In 2007, only 195 businesses achieved the perfect score.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
This was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six. Five. Four. Three. Two. One.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
God bless America.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And so, my fellow Americans,
your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. We're having a little love fest today with the McCain folks. I hope you don't mind. I'm wanting everybody to know how much I love and respect John McCain and Sarah Palin today. So that's what we're talking about. Probably what we'll be talking about mostly for the next 55 days. Isn't it a shame that we are in this now short election season? Wish to God it had been short from day one. Too bad it didn't start just a couple of months ago in its entirety. But here we are stuck into, what, the 19th month of it or so? And now we've gotten down to the nitty-gritty where the campaigns should be talking about real hard issues. That's what we should be talking about now. We should be talking about unemployment. We should be talking about housing. We should be talking about deficits. We should be talking about national health care. We should be talking about the war in Iran and the war in Iraq. And we should be talking about our standing around the world. We should be talking about working on Social Security to shore it up and make sure it lasts far into the future. We should be talking about all these things. What are we talking about? We're talking about lipstick on pigs. Did any of you see Chris Matthews last night, that dope that is high up in the campaign for McCain? And I have to hand it to Matthews last night. I did enjoy that. He beat him up into the corner and just beat the crap out of him, really, is what he did. Do you really believe that Barack Obama was calling Sarah Palin a pig? And the guy just would not answer the question. And Matthews, to his credit for a change, just kept after it. Never did get an answer. Not a real answer. Because those guys never do really answer questions. I talked with a friend today, and my friend told me that the Republicans get elected because they're clever. Clever. I don't think clever's got anything to do with it. Clever isn't the word I would use. They get elected because they are accomplished, convincing liars. Deceitful. Dishonest, immoral, unethical. You can just keep going with words like that until you run out of them. You don't have to be clever to convince the evangelical base of anything. Look with what you're dealing with. I mean, for the most part, with the evangelical base, you could tell second graders that the moon is made of green cheese, and the kids will probably believe you. You could talk them into it. Same thing with the most of the evangelical community on the whole. From what I've heard, most of the second graders are better able to use their logic than adult evangelicals, from what I've seen. The Republican candidates are dealing with mostly ignorant voters. And they're taking full advantage of the fact that the evangelicals can't identify a lie from the Republican candidates if it hits them in the face. They just don't get it, and the Republicans know it, and they use these people like pawns in a chess game. And for 30 years now, the evangelicals have been taken to the cleaners by the likes of Falwell and Dobson and Robertson and Richard Land and Ted Haggard and a host of others. And they've yet to figure out that these people are merely taking advantage of them just to get their votes, and also that the Republican politicians, for the most part, never had any intention of doing away with Roe v. Wade, or they would have done it by now. Family values, you must be kidding me. My friend mentioned that the Democrats are out for a free ride. Bull! Nothing could be further from the truth. Democrats want some equality. They want fairness. They want justice for all. They want all citizens to have access to good health care. They don't want any family to have to choose between eating and buying life-saving medicine or medical procedures. Is that a free ride? If you identify that as a free ride, then you're just, you're not capable of living in a gentle society, in a civilized society. This is the simple human compassion which is sorely lacking in the Republican platform over the years. They don't get it. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Guy, hey, Sandra, how's it going?
Hi, Sandra.
Listen, you know, I don't blame you for being on a tear, because this situation is really, it's just bizarre in how it's so effective.
It is. It is.
And the thing is, the only thing that I'm cautiously optimistic about is the Electoral College is what elects president.
Yes, thank goodness this time.
And you need to focus on that, because those polls are, the national polls, you know, aren't really dealing so much with the state-to-state realities. And the big states like Michigan and Pennsylvania, you know, McCain's not doing all that great.
That's right. That's right.
I'm just saying, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm troubled too, but I'm also sort of trying to look at it from a, you know, political scientist point of view, which would, you know, tend to look at that aspect of it, because the polls are so subjective, you know?
Well, you're exactly right, Sandra. I mean, I completely agree with you. I was looking at the electoral map last night, and it looks good. It looks very good.
But that's not to say that what you're talking about isn't relevant and real, because it's so hard to imagine. Things are so serious that this stuff is still playing. This is the thing, and I'm not too sure what the hell is going on, because the Palin thing is just not that captivating compared to what the hell am I looking at now? Washington Mutual, Lehman Brothers? Are you kidding?
Yeah,
me?
Yeah.
No, that's some serious shit. And I'm stunned that these huge financial institutions are just sort of falling away like a bunch of dust.
They are. And, you know,
I don't care about no lipstick. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
Give an F. I am so disturbed by the discourse. Somebody was talking about some article, you know, Rome is burning, and they talking about lipstick.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I agree. It's very frustrating to, you know, it's not that I feel we're going to lose this, because you're right. The electoral map looks very nice right now. Looks very nice. It's just the fact that it's frustrating that when you walk out into public, and, you know, where I live, for example, you walk down the street and you know that two out of three of people that you see walking down the street are idiots. I mean, that's what it's come to for me, and I don't want to feel that way.
Oh, my God. That's funny. I'm sorry. I have to laugh, because it's like, yeah, it's really no rhyme or reason that this pig, you know, bitch, Palin, is even generating this kind of interest. I mean, her ass should be grateful that there was a women's movement for her to be in this position.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's
yeah.
disgusting. It's like, listen, lady, you wouldn't be anywhere, you know, if it wasn't for these liberal policies that, you know, you're vilifying. I'm so sick of that.
Oh, where would she...
doing it. I'm sick of women doing it. It's like, hey, where the hell you think you'd be?
Sandra, I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you a question. I don't want to be too personal on you. You can decline to answer this question if you want. But as you well know, the abortion issue is a single issue, single voting issue for millions of people. They would vote for Hitler if he was pro-life. I mean, you know that's how it is. I've got my views on it. And you've got your views on it. Everybody's got your views on it. But can you be enough of a single-issue voter? I mean, I swear to you, and maybe I shouldn't feel the way I do, and probably half the women in the crowd will hate me for saying this, but when compared to John McCain, if compared to John McCain, and those are the two choices I have, and Barack Obama right now, we're pro-life, I'd still vote for Barack Obama. I can't do the single issue thing, and yet millions of people are, and I don't really understand it.
Well, no, you know, and I'll say something that will probably get people pissed off too, because the whole abortion issue is like the health care issue for the Republicans. You know, I think we'll never get no damn health care, and I think the Republicans run the abortion thing in the same way. They know that you know, that overturning that would cause even more damage to them in the long run.
So take away their biggest issue that they have.
Right, and it's the same thing with the health care. I'm sorry, I just see a lot of lip service. The situation is systematically too big without some sort of Roosevelt-type huge turnover to get us a health care system. I think the Democrats use that sort of in the same way.
Well, you could be well right. I don't know what's in the hearts of a lot of them. I know we've had a few people really work hard on it and try it. Where we're at the moment, I don't know.
I listen to Obama and I read what he's actually talking about. He still is coddling the health care industry, and that is a death sentence for any kind of widespread health care in this country. You have to get rid of the insurance. That's just basic, or even a mandated one like Hillary suggested is a closer step to making a reality in what these Obama is talking about.
Well,
but back to your question about the abortion thing. I'd be right there with you voting. That issue is containable compared to the total destruction of the country. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
I don't, you know.
I'm just not a one-issue voter. I never will be. I have to put it on the scales and look at the whole package. And
well, I think that just feeds into that whole authoritarian aspect of the Republicans. You know, they can line up on these one issues at the exclusion of everything else, which is so bizarre to me.
Yeah, it works for them. It really works for them. I got to tell you. I mean, I've got some relatives that I don't care, a cousin and his wife. That no matter what, that is the single issue. That is the single issue, and whichever candidate comes up pro-life, that's who they're voting for. They don't care if the guy's got a fiscal plan for the country. They don't care.
Well, no, but see, it's just so weird to me because I don't understand the obsession with the fetus, you see? It's just sort of, I think it's just more control issue. I'm sorry. I think it's controlling women.
It is. It is. It absolutely is. And, you know, we could debate that all day. I just been trying to find out from people why they're single issue voters and how many are single issue voters. I think in the evangelical community, a huge percentage of them are single issue voters.
Speaking of that, do you know what the percentage of evangelicals are in the U.S.? Do you know what that number is?
I believe as far as people who say that they do profess a faith is somewhere around 30%. So, you know, that's a pretty big number.
Well,
you know, you look at the South and it's just like, wow, almost all.
Well, I'm still kind of concerned with, you know, how reticent the Obama campaign is, you know?
Yeah, they are.
He doesn't have to lash out, but are they still holding back on the 527?
I am told by someone who should know that they are in the process of changing their minds about that because they're starting to feel like they're taking on water.
Yeah, okay, good, because, you know, I'm not an operative, and I can see that you know, high moral is just a bunch of lows. They need to stop with that. They need to let these 527s hit it, because I know they want to and I know they can, you know.
Oh, they can. There are people that wanted to get started on it right away.
Yeah, and if Obama is, you know, the head of the Democratic Party like he is, because he's a nominee, I don't know what the hell he thinks he's doing. If he's not, you know, this is war. They don't care. They won't do anything.
Well, and he also, as the nominee of the party and the head of the party right now, can put somebody on these 527s. Yes, go ahead, help us out. But, hey, boys, here's the limits, and you're not going over these lines.
They can do that because,
sure.
You know, they don't need to go as butt ugly as the Republicans.
No.
They had lost their minds with that kindergarten thing.
Yeah. That's a beaut right there. And yet,
that's unbelievable. But if, you know, because I don't want to hear them shutting down Wesley Clark, that kind of stuff. That really pissed me off. It's like, listen, you didn't say it, but he said it, and you're going to chastise him in public?
Yeah.
I really didn't like that, you know.
No, I know. Well.
And the Democrats are real inclined to play that game. It's like the Republicans can't govern, but they can play politics, and the Republicans and the Democrats need to take a page, you know?
Right. Right. That's for sure.
Anyway, listen, I'll let you go.
Hey, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Oh, I don't know. I still frustrated. For those of you, you want a little bit of something funny here for a minute? Did you hear that Sean Hannity had Robert Cutter on his show from the American Prospect, and he got into a real Donnybrook with him? I haven't heard this, but somebody sent it to me. I'm going to take a chance and go ahead and play it for you. I've read the transcription from it. I think you'll enjoy it. It's loading. Come on here. Should start playing here in a moment. Not my drive radio. Hannity has a meltdown.
With the U.S. economy in turmoil, many experts believe this election will come down to voters.
With the U.S. economy in turmoil, many experts believe
this election will campaign on a promise of change. At least one expert thinks that the change he's promising may not be enough. In his new book, Obama's Challenge, America's Economic Crisis, and the Power of a Transformative Presidency, author Robert Kuttner argues that it's going to take more than just charisma to lead this country out of crisis. Joining us now to talk about this, Robert Kuttner. Good to have you on our show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This idea of change, obviously, it can't just be a word. It's got to have some stuff behind it. In this book, do you go into what is...
Of course, this is the Hannity's monkey here.
I think if Obama's elected president,
Combs,
he's going to have to be a transformational president like Roosevelt was, or the economy is going to fall in on him because the economy is in such dire straits for most people.
Now, I guess the question is, are people really going to vote on the economy, or are they going to vote on all the stuff we're talking about day after day? Who said what? He said, she said, they said.
Right.
Look what this person did. Look how bad this person is, rather than what's really affecting the American people.
That is what is going to decide the election. If people vote on whether Sarah Palin is better at shooting a moose, the Democrats are toast. And if Obama and Biden can bring the election back to the fact that the Republicans have had their shot at experimenting and letting Wall Street go nuts, and it's really harmed ordinary people, then the election turns on the economy and the Democrats win. So this is a fight about whether the election is about culture or about
politics. So they're really running a narrative. Republicans are running on the life of Sarah Palin. Who is she? Soccer mom has had a terrific trajectory.
Right.
John McCain, war hero. They're running on narrative, and Democrats need to run on issues. That's what you're saying.
No, I think Democrats need to run on narrative. And there's a narrative of the ordinary, hardworking family just getting the short end of the stick, everything from subprime to health insurance, to your pension blowing up, to your job not being secure. And that's a narrative that affects ordinary people. If that narrative is persuasive, the Democrats win.
Right, but is Obama the guy to sell that? He's got to close the sale, which he's not yet done to the American people. How does he do that?
Well, he's intermittently closed it. I mean, I think sometimes he tries to be too high-minded. He tries to be the guy who bridges differences, who's post-partisan.
Oh, stop it. This is garbage you're spewing here.
No name-calling yet.
It's garbage you're spewing.
He's the guy who's trying to be idealistic, and this is a cutthroat campaign.
He's hiding who he really is. You don't hang out with Flager and Ayers and Wright for 20 years and then just say, oh, I didn't hardly know these guys. And if you want to believe that garbage, you go right ahead. You are voting for Obama, by the way. This is a pro-Obama book. You are voting for Obama.
But I'm not here to do Obama.
Oh, stop it. You're doing RNC talking points. These are Hannity talking points.
Where do you get
Here's what we have. You say you spew this line. DNC talking points.
Stop insulting me, or I'm walking off
curse.
The set.
Go ahead. Go.
Are
goodbye.
You let me have
Leave.
My 2 minutes.
I don't care. Go right ahead. Walk off.
You said the economy is in dire straits.
It is in dire straits. You're going to deny that, you fool?
You fool, you idiot.
You're going to deny that the economy is in dire straits?
Unemployment in this country has been lower than the last four decades. Economic growth in the last quarter was 3.3%. Interest rates, inflation have been lower in the Bush years than they've been in the last three decades, and you are trying to convince the people of America that something is right.
Do I get a turn to talk? Go ahead. Well, if you can persuade the American people that the average family is doing great, your guy deserves to win the election. But I don't think the American people are that stupid.
Yeah, okay. So you're saying dire straits. You know what? Here's the position you Democrats are in. You got to convince the American people the surge has failed, the war is lost.
I'm talking about the economy.
Excuse me. We had record unemployment compared to the last four decades, lower than the last four decades average, 3.3% growth, and you're using the term dire. You've got to convince the American people the economy's in bad shape and the war is lost, and it's all based on a lie. That's not true.
It's based on people's own lives. People's health insurance are going up in smoke. People's pensions are going up in smoke. People's jobs are being exported to China. Unemployment is 6.1% and rising. The administration is bailing out Wall Street because of Republican deregulation.
And we got out of the recession that Clinton Gore gave us, and we got out of the negative impact on the economy on Line 11. Now, we have made one...
If you think the economy is great, you campaign on that.
And Barack Obama wants to spend $1 trillion on new spending. $1 trillion in new government spending and nationalized health care. Is that good for the economy?
We probably need more than that. You talk to the average person about their insecurity of health care.
So you want the government to answer all our problems?
Well, the Secretary of the Treasury, Mr. Paulson, apparently does when it comes to bailing out Wall Street.
The same government that bankrupted Social Security? The same government that bankrupted Medicare?
Social Security is in much better shape than Citigroup or Morgan Stanley. Or if most of the banks on Wall Street were in as good a shape as Social Security, this country would be in great shape. The election is going to turn on whether pocketbook issues trump
Sarah Palin's
mood story.
We also need to drill, and he's wrong on that. But anyway, coming up, American...
We'll dedicate this to Sean Hannity.
To help me cope with anything. If you see the wonder of a fairy tale, you can take the future even if you fail. I believe in angels, something good in everything I see. I believe in angels, when I know the time is right for me, I'll cross the street. I have a dream.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. I've got something interesting to tell you because it's something that I've experienced firsthand, and I always like it when I've got information right in front of my eyes that I can process in my brain, and I can give you no clearer example of propaganda than what I'm about to tell you about Rush Limbaugh. I've heard him talk a lot of times and give a lot of BS about this, that, and the other thing. He's the master of propaganda. He's the Joseph Goebbels of our time. Isn't any question of that. And I know I'm not ashamed of saying that, isn't it politically correct or not. He is the Joseph Goebbels of our time. He's the best. But to give you an example of something that I've actually experienced of what a liar and propagandist Rush Limbaugh is, and I know I've used that word liar a lot today, but it's appropriate today, quite apropos. Rush Limbaugh, on his program, citing some writer nobody ever heard of the other day, said, if you think that's something, wait until you read some of will you read some of Spengler's description of the atmosphere at Invesco Field on the night of Obama's Greco-Roman oration. Rush goes on to say that what Spengler has written confirms what an unnamed friend of his relayed to him from another final night attendee. And this is the account from Rush Limbaugh's viewpoint of how things were the Thursday night two weeks ago tonight in the stadium at Invesco Field. This is Limbaugh's take. Senator Barack Obama's acceptance speech last week seemed vastly different from the stands of this city's Invesco Stadium than it did to the 40 million who saw it on television. Melancholy hung like thick smog over the reserved seats where I sat with Democratic Party staffers. Excuse me, because it's difficult to read this without laughing. The crowd, of course, cheered mechanically at the taglines, flourished placards, and even rose for the obligatory wave around the stadium. But its mood was sour. The air carried the acrid smell of defeat, and the crowd took shallow breaths. Even the appearance of R&B great Stevie Wonder failed to get the blood pumping. Well, now, Rush, I was there. I have not read of a greater distortion of actual events in my lifetime than what you've said is your take from your friend as to what happened in Invesco Field 2 weeks ago tonight. He said melancholy hung there like thick smog over the reserve crowd. Folks, I was there, and many of you heard me give the play-by-play of what went on, and I thank you for that. I'm not a new kid on the block. I've been to lots of great things in my life that I've enjoyed a great deal. And you could not possibly experience in a public venue a greater night than that was. Every last observation coming from Limbaugh's mouth here is a flat-out lie. Whatever you saw on TV, and I have seen the replay on C-SPAN, which gave the best account of it, I watched the replay on C-SPAN, and let me tell you, as great as it was on C-SPAN, and it was, as great as it was, you didn't get 5% of the energy and the magic that was in that stadium tonight, that night. You didn't get only a tiny, tiny portion of it. I watched it in awe. I watched it thrilled. Every fiber of my being absolutely thrilled and energized and elated that the Democrats could put on such a wonderful program that evening and that Barack Obama could give such a stirring, stimulating speech and that the crowd went crazy for Barack Obama. The flags that were waving, the beautiful evening. The stadium was packed with thousands more than they even dreamed of having there, with many, many more outside that couldn't even get in. This was a magical moment in the aura of politics over the years, over my lifetime, certainly the biggest political night that I know of. And for anybody, for whatever reason, to say that the mood was sour and the air carried the acrid smell of defeat and the crowd took shallow breaths is absolutely insane. I don't know that this Spangler who Rush talked to could make himself look any more stupid than this. And there I go using that word again. But I don't think he could possibly look more of a fool than writing something like this about that wonderful, wonderful night in the stadium. I have to believe that even some hardcore right-wingers, had they been in that crowd that night, would have felt the electricity from it. In fact, I know some did. I've heard people, commentators talk about it, how it was quite a night. It was an electrifying night. So, you Limbaugh aficionados, you who hang on every one of his words, as he is the great minister of propaganda for the Republican Party, just let it be known that I was there. You can take my word for it if you want to or not, but you couldn't have a greater political rally and speech and all that than that was that night. Couldn't happen. Limbaugh, once again, the consummate liar. I didn't know whether to talk about this next subject or not, but I'm going to take a few minutes to talk about it. We hear one thing from the press and another from the campaign. And we have this whistleblower that's coming forth against John and Cindy McCain, and his name is Gasinski. Tom Gasinski. And the picture that he's painting, and I don't know which article this actually, forgive me, I will get you, it comes from Open Left, from Matt Stoller, okay? Says, you probably heard about Cindy McCain stealing prescription drugs from her charity in the 1990s. Well, today, Tom Gasinski, her former employee and close friend of the McCains, came out on the record about the entire sordid episode. He's been quiet all these years about it. And it appears that McCain used his Senate staff and resources to cover up Cindy's drug use and potentially to prevent the Drug Enforcement Agency from investigating his wife's theft of illegal prescription drugs. John McCain certainly used his political connections to begin a campaign of intimidation against Gasinski. Because at the time, this was after the Keating 5 scandal, another major scandal would have derailed his career. Gasinski stayed quiet out of fear until today. A recent fight with cancer has strengthened his resolve, and as he told me today, if he can beat cancer, he can go on the record regarding how the McCains do business. This is from Open Left and Matt Stoller, and here is Tom Gasinski.
Did John McCain use his power and position to influence any of the legal proceedings?
Certainly did. Rick Romley, the county attorney, was a political ally of John McCain's. And John Dowd kept the case in federal court because it had been bumped down, which, you know, first-time offender for stealing some prescription drugs and having prescriptions written in somebody else's name. Most often we bump down to the county or state court. Well, in Arizona, they're mandatory drug laws.
Mm-hmm.
So by keeping it at a federal level and getting Cindy into a diversion program, you know, there was never a prosecution, even though she admitted everything. Remember, we traveled overseas. John's Senate staff, mostly Mark Schulter and Corey Clark, helped facilitate our travel.
A little bit of that somewhat quiet, I'm afraid. But this is the guy that worked for Cindy McCain. And so Gosinski was an employee of Cindy McCain who helped her run her charity, the American Voluntary Medical Team, AVMT, in the early to mid-90s. And at the time Gosinski worked for her, Cindy McCain was addicted to prescription painkillers, taking between, get this, sounds kind of Limbaugh-esque here, taking between 30 to 50 pills a day of Vicodin and or Percocet. She had doctors writing out prescriptions in other people's names. That is illegal. Including Gosinski, and when Gosinski found out one of the prescriptions, found one of the prescription slips, he got angry, and Cindy had him fired. Isn't that nice? This part of the story is just kind of sad, but not damning. Cindy McCain was a lonely and bored wife who turned to drugs in place of what was a loveless marriage full of fundraisers and, in all likelihood, various infidelities, or so were the rumors Gosinski heard at the time. Now it begins to get dangerous and vicious after Gosinski was fired. At first, the McCains said they'd help him find a job, but it became clear to Gosinski that McCain was using his political connections to blackball him from another job in Republican politics in Arizona. So he sued the McCains for wrongful termination and went to the Drug Enforcement Agency to find out the legal repercussions of having prescriptions for painkillers written in his name, which is clearly illegal. To retaliate, McCain then had his political ally, Rick Romney, open an extortion investigation against Gosinski, and in the course of that investigation, it was revealed that the DEA was circling around Cindy McCain and her charity. It's not clear what they were investigating her for, but it is clear she was bringing illegal prescription drugs around the world on a diplomatic passport secured for her by McCain's Senate office. McCain's Senate staff and Senate resources were intimately involved in Cindy's work with the charity, and John McCain procured her a diplomatic passport, which meant that her bags were not searched by customs, and Mark Salter and Tory Clark were both coordinating with Gosinski on logistics for the trips abroad. Here's Gosinski's on the coordination with McCain's Senate staff. The charity was supposed to conduct medical missions abroad, but Cindy was also stealing from the charity's supply of drugs for her own personal use. And in August of 1994, the story was going to come out, and so John McCain came out with his side of the story. He claimed he didn't know that Cindy McCain was using drugs until 1994, a clear lie. Cindy McCain overdosed in 1991, and John McCain went to the hospital in Sedona and told the hospital staff not to make the information about Cindy public. Gosinski heard about the overdose in 1992 after he began to work for Cindy McCain. There are lots of unanswered questions, but the basic contours of the story are clear. John McCain used his position as a senator to help his wife abuse illegal drugs and avoid being searched by customs, and somehow his wife managed to avoid any charges by the DEA or the state, which has mandatory minimums in cases like this, on drug charges, despite ample evidence. Did the DEA or the state not file charges against her because of political pressure? Did they keep this on the federal level to avoid mandatory minimums for Cindy McCain because of political pressure from McCain? Did John McCain and or his Senate staff tamper with a criminal investigation of his wife and her conspiracy to fraudulently obtain illegal drugs? Whether illegal or not, and an investigation by Congress should happen. This is clearly a massive and overreaching case of both corruption on a personal sordid level and an abuse of power, and you might be seeing Gosinski on the mainstream media soon. There needs to be an investigation in what happened here. What did McCain know about the investigation of his wife, and did he use his power as a senator to help her abuse drugs or avoid prosecution? When he was one of 100 senators, it was of minor importance, and now, well, it would be nice to know if the next president of the United States is engaged in behavior more characteristic of an influence-peddling mob boss than an upright politician. This from Open Left and Matt Stoller. Matt doing the interview with Gosinski. Take it for what it's worth. Not a proud moment in the lives of the McCain family. Certainly not. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here on the Guy James Show today. Also wanted to read you a little note from a lifelong Republican, Sergeant Major Myers. I have known of and about John McCain for as long as he's been in the public eye. I have, as a fellow soldier and a fellow citizen, respected him for his extraordinary military and public service. In fact, I believe we as a nation should respect and appreciate and, yes, honor what he has done for our nation. I believe his have been the actions of an exceptionally brave and historically honorable man. It is with great sadness that I say to you that John McCain is not an honorable man today. The reason I say this is because I am observing and hearing reported by every major news organization in this country that he and his running mate are participating in and personally articulating blatant lies. These are not the actions of honorable people. When one is aspiring to the highest and second highest public offices in the land, it is incumbent upon one to speak truth and only truth and to communicate about those issues that are vital of importance to the citizens of the nation. It is not honorable for individuals to speak lies to the citizens and make unproven accusations against those whom they oppose. When one opposes another person in vying for public office, it becomes even more important to ensure that one speaks the truth and deals with issues and substantive differences and not innuendo and accusation. The fact that John McCain is a former naval officer and a sitting United States Senator makes this lack of honor horribly reprehensible. But I think what makes this lack of honor so disgusting and even more vile is that he would lose himself to the point of using his own sacrifice and service as a shield to commit such petty, dishonorable acts of lying. Conservative, liberal, or independent, share his beliefs or not, it would be morally reprehensible for anyone to support someone who displays so little honor. Sometimes we must call them like they are. Prisoner of war or not, service to country or not, there's a line, and John McCain and his running mate have crossed the line. The nation has endured 8 long years of lies and deceptions from the 2 highest-ranking public figures in the country and virtually their entire administration. Our honor as a nation is not just blemished, but in tatters, and we cannot endure another 4 or 8 years of the same. If for no other reason than the fact that John McCain and his vice presidential running mate have publicly lied and continue to lie, this nation needs to ensure that he does not occupy the office of president. Our nation needs honor above all else at this crucial point in our history. With honor comes respect, and from this comes all else. Sergeant Major Myers, thank you for that. He's a lifelong Republican. That about says it all, does it not? And Andrew Sullivan from the Daily Dish from theatlantic.com. Andrew Sullivan, another Republican, another conservative, said, "For me, this surreal moment, like the entire surrealism of the past 10 days, is not really about Sarah Palin or Barack Obama or pigs or fish or lipstick. It's about John McCain. The one thing I always thought I knew about him is that he's a decent and honorable person. When he knows, as every sane person must, that Obama did not in any conceivable sense mean that Sarah Palin is a pig, what did he do? Did he come out and say so and end this charade, or did he acquiesce in and thereby enable the mindless Rovianism that is now the core feature of his campaign? So far, he's let us all down, and my guess is he will continue to do so, and that decision, for my part, ends whatever respect I once had for him. on core moral issues where this man knew what the right thing was and had to pick between good and evil, he chose evil. When he knew that George W. Bush's war in Iraq was a fiasco and a catastrophe, and before Donald Rumsfeld quit, McCain endorsed George W. Bush against his fellow Vietnam vet, John Kerry, in 2004. By that decision, McCain lost any credibility that he ever put country first. He put party first and his own career first of what he knew was best for the country. And when the Senate and House voted overwhelmingly to condemn and end the torture regime of Bush and Cheney in 2006, McCain again made a clear choice between good and evil, and he chose evil. He capitulated and enshrined torture as the policy of the United States by allowing the CIA to use techniques as bad and worse than the torture inflicted on him in Vietnam. He gave the war criminals in the White House retroactive immunity against the prosecution they so richly deserve. The enormity of this moral betrayal, this betrayal of his country's honor, has yet to sink in. But for my part, it now makes much more sense. He is not the man I thought he was. And when he had a chance to engage in a real and substantive debate against the most talented politician of the next generation in a fall campaign, where vital issues are at stake, what did McCain do? He began his general campaign with a series of grotesque, trivial, and absurd MTV-style attacks on Obama's virtues and implied disgusting things about his opponent's patriotism. And then, because he could see he was going to lose 10 days ago, he threw caution to the wind and, with no vetting whatsoever, picked a woman who, by her decision to endure her own 8-month pregnancy of a Down syndrome child in public, that he was going to reignite the culture war as a last stand against Obama. That's all that is happening right now. A massive bump in the enthusiasm of the Christianist base. This is pure Rove. Yes, McCain made a decision that revealed many appalling things about him. In the end, his final concern is not national security. No one cares about who cares about national security would pick as vice president someone who knows nothing about it as his replacement. No one who cares about this country's safety would gamble the security of the world on a total unknown because she polled well with the Christianist base. No person who truly believed that the surge was integral to this country's national security was pick as his vice presidential candidate a woman who, so far as we can tell anything, opposed it at the time. McCain has demonstrated in the last 2 months that he does not have the character to be president of the United States, and that is why it is more important than ever to ensure that Barack Obama is the next president. The alternative is now unthinkable, and McCain, no one else has proved it. That's from Andrew Sullivan in theatlantic.com, and I couldn't say it better myself. I could not. I think the man is not an honest man. He's not an ethical man. He's not a moral man. He's not a man deserving of the office of the presidency of the United States. And I'm sure we'll reiterate those thoughts many times over the next 54 or 55 days, whatever it is. But he had a chance in the last couple of days to show that he was a real man. He had a chance to tell his campaign to take his name off those ads and not run them. He did have a chance to do that. I'm John McCain, and I approve this ad. That's why those ads have that tag on there, because you can't deny them anymore. You can't say, "Oh, well, that was my campaign staff." No. If you got any brains, you don't put your tag on a political ad with your name on it and your approval, unless you agree with it. And obviously, John McCain is ready, willing, and able to stoop that low. And I believe, once again, that if you're a reasonable thinking person, you will understand that he has lost his honor, he has lost his respect. And I agree what's saying on the chat room, he has not surrounded himself with honorable people either. I mean, you have the likes of Phil Graham talking about Americans who are losing their homes and their jobs and their medical care and their pensions. And when you have a man like that telling all of us that Americans in those straits are whiners, that shows the judgment of John McCain. He has dozens of lobbyists around him running his campaign. Something he feigns to, I don't like all this lobbying and so forth, and yet his organization is polluted with them. Once again, saying one thing and doing another. John McCain, it's always arguable, not always, but sometimes arguable in a presidential campaign whether this candidate's better, that candidate's better, and you have to just agree to disagree a lot of times. But I think it's more than obvious right now, and it should be obvious to every man, woman, and child in the United States that this man doesn't have the character to be the president of the United States, and he has proven it. Being a POW doesn't give you the character you need to be the president of the United States. And as far as I'm concerned, he's dishonored anything that he ever gained by that. He has shown himself not to be a good man. And above all else, we need somebody with goodness in their heart to lead this country out of the straits that we're in right now. And John McCain is not that man. Well, I want to thank you for joining me here on the Guy James Show today. It's been a pleasure. This is a listener-supported show, and we could most definitely use your help right now. It's tough to keep this thing going, okay? And I hope you understand that. I'm serious. I want to thank Billy Shears, musical director, and I want to thank everybody, Bob and Agnes, and the Head On Radio Network. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you next time, gang.